there are some really cool stuff that you should be able to do in VR, but you can't today. And when these things start to happen, it's going to have a really profound effect on how attractive the media is to consume.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. So at the Collision Conference in Toronto, I had the pleasure of interviewing Halsey Miner. We're recording outside, you're going to hear, hence the background noise, for a very good reason. We were kicked out of our recording booth by the music star Akon. But Halsey is a star in an entirely different way. He's an entrepreneur and business person best known for starting CNET back in 1992. He's currently the CEO of VR startup Live Planet. And he was an early believer in Salesforce. In fact, he was the second largest shareholder when the company went public. So that goes to show how much of a visionary he is. Halsey built CNET into a top 10 website that was doing $500 million in business. And about $5 million of that was doing TV shows for Sci-Fi, USA, CNBC. And he had always wanted to innovate in television the same way they innovated online. And he didn't really see an avenue until VR came along. And it began to feel like it had potential to turn into something. So he found an engineer he'd been watching a long time, and they tried to build a camera that would live stitch. They showed it at CES, and people for the first time could see themselves live in VR. Halsey realized in order to build a business in VR, though, there was no standard, no way for the pieces to fit together because there's no standard for how to do it. So he realized he had to build the whole platform, and that's where we joined the conversation.
So I realized that I had to go and build a complete platform. I had to build the camera, the cloud, and all of the apps to be able to distribute it.
Because I was going to say, like, in some ways that makes it, I feel like, more exciting as a pioneer, seeing that it's so open and saying that there's so much fertile ground to be, you know, sowed upon, basically, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think I would have had the guts to take on, you know, basically having to build out something that, you know, an industry needs if I didn't have prior experience kind of building technologies. And I, you know, what's really clear is because we've built a system that does a really good job of doing really high quality video, live is amazing, and to be able to take that capture that and send it to all the platforms simultaneously in 360 is a huge change in the way video can be produced and distributed in VR.
Well, I think that also one thing that always fascinates me, and this is something I talk to people a lot, is timing. In terms of when you're trying to figure out when something's going to be big, how do you time it so that you invest in something at just the right moment and not too late, you know, and obviously not too soon either, you know, because both of those things can be killers. And I know that you've got a history of, you, for instance, Salesforce. You had an early
investment. I invested $20 million in Salesforce in 1999.
Which I was going to say, like,
which still stuns me.
Which, how many people even, you know, knew about Salesforce? I mean, I did.
There were many.
Like, not a lot of people.
Me and Larry Ellison.
There you go. So, I mean, being able to, I think, have that foresight to be able to tell when something's going to be big and timing it right, how are you making those decisions with respect to VR?
And I saw a bunch of people going out and, you know, investing $50, $100 million, a bunch of people running around doing content, and it was clear to me that the technology wasn't there. And so you had these companies like Jaunt that had, you know, raised huge amounts of money, and they would spend 70% of the money fixing stitching. So this camera here stitches perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, in real time, right? So that was just a matter of the market just being really immature. So big, huge amounts of budget went to things that delivered no value to the end product. So, you know, I think people just, you know, people get excited and they want to go do stuff. But as you say, you know, the world, when the world's ready for something, the world's ready for something. And I think if Facebook had not spent $2 billion, they had spent $100 million on the headset, I think it wouldn't have confused so many people about the state of the technology, right? The fact that they invested $2 billion mm-hmm. made everybody go, "Oh my God, this is real."
Yeah,
we got to go do this. And you know, we were a total oddball because while everybody's running around doing content, doing all this stuff, we're just engineering. We didn't have any marketing people or salespeople, whatever. We just kept engineering, and that's, you know, we're just now really getting the product into the channel and you know, and pushing the platform.
I think also, by the way, another thing that's in some ways beneficial, I'd argue, is that if you're talking about a B2B play versus B2C, there's a different level of education already in the market, which means, and you're also able to, in effect, narrow cast your marketing towards the very specific buyers and the very specific use cases. So maybe it becomes easier in that way when you're trying to really not educate the consumer populace, but you know, go directly to the people who are going to be using your technology on a B2B level.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. So in order to build a website in 1993, when I started the company, well, I guess we started building it in 94. In order to build a website, I actually had to create web publishing software. So these basic pieces, you know, building blocks had to be built and integrated in order for there to be really anything that that looked like, you know, had a reasonable chance of being produced and distributed in such a way that it could have a large enough audience to be self-sustaining.
What are some of the things that you've seen, the most real, valid use cases for VR at the moment? Obviously, there are quite a few, but any in particular that you get excited about?
So there's always has to be that one use case that you think about in terms of the tools that you develop and the workflow, whatever. So for us, it's music. We're not competing with television, and the concert experience is about the experience, right? And people are still going to concerts in record numbers. And so VR, unlike television, has the ability to capture that, experience. But what's also important to remember is that the technology of sending music over the internet, that's already solved. Like everybody can do that now. So all you're really doing is you're asking somebody who's listening to music and is already tuned out. I mean, you know, if you're listening to music, you're not playing Monopoly with the family, right? I mean, you're tuned out. So all you're doing is just asking them to take one more incremental step, and that's to wear something. And it turns out to be probably the best application to start with for VR, I mean, in terms of mass adoption, right?
One of the key things that I'm talking to people about a lot now is the idea that, you know, you have certain biases, right? And I think a good entrepreneur challenges their own biases and their own beliefs on a daily basis, because
absolutely,
you look and you see, hey, you know what? I thought that use case A would be the best for my technology.
Yeah.
Actually, B is getting more traction. And the ones that succeed are the ones that acknowledge that and move in that direction.
Absolutely.
So how do you work on that, or how have you worked on that in your career to say, listen, I have a certain point of view, but I'm willing to be challenged, and I'm going to be a better predictor of the future if I can pivot, in essence, on
No, I challenge, my assumptions literally every day. You know, and sometimes people, you know, sometimes it can look like indecision, right? Because you want to go one way and then you go another way because the world sort of tells you. You know what? It's interesting because I told people the importance of the system that we've put out there. What I tell people is the most important thing is to get it, to deliver a product that's close enough that people can find things they don't like. And what I mean by that is that if it's not close enough to being used, they don't use it. If they use it, then they can, if it's close enough that they'll use it, then they can start saying, well, you know, if this was better and this was better, and that launches companies. That iterative relationship with your customers begins, and that flywheel is really the difference between companies that end up being extremely successful and those who just, you know, really sort of die on the vine.
So that's okay. So two things when you're talking about dying on the vine versus success that I want to ask you specifically with respect to VR. Thing number one is basically the friction associated with hardware and whether or not the actual physical constraints are too onerous for people. I keep thinking about Google Glass and why that failed. And then, which I realize is a different product, but still. And then I think the other thing is the network effects, which is, you know, what additional advantage is there to, you know, the more people you get on a particular VR platform or just VR as a technology, are there network effects within VR? So maybe if you want to tackle those in shorter.
Yeah, I mean, we do. We actually think, you know, I've played a game, with people actually who were from friends from Argentina, and it was one of the most interesting experiences that I've ever had following them around in VR. In fact, it's really interesting because until I had done that, I didn't really understand why Facebook bought, Facebook bought Oculus. But it's really interesting, oddly, when you're tuning out this headset, you are tuning in to something else. So I think we see the social aspect of it being really interesting. So, you know, we're looking at things like, you know, when you have a concert with your friends, you know, how do you communicate with them? Well, you know, you can actually speak to them because all of these things have microphones and speakers. And so you can actually allow, and I personally think that the social overlay over top of all of this is really important to adoption. And I think there are tons of very sort of clever uses of social inside of VR. In fact, I would almost say that in order for VR to become really big, it will have to take on a very social character. So what may be tuning out in the world around you is tuning in to another world of friends. But I think the ability to weave social into these experiences, you know, I mean, I see it, you know, with people. I mean, we're thinking about right now, like if you're watching a concert, how do you bring your friends along in that experience? Because you do in real life, right? You know, the other thing I just want to say is that to build a medium, a whole bunch of things have to happen, and there are some really cool stuff that you should be able to do in VR, but you can't today. And when these things start to happen, it's going to have a really profound effect on how attractive the media is to consume. Like, let me give you an example. So TV has text and graphics, right? They have, you know, beautiful graphics on, you know, sports shows. And then, but when you embed those same kinds of things in VR, they're part of your reality, right? And so when I talk about like concerts as a use case, you know, I point out, well, you know, we'd have a camera backstage where you can't normally go. We'd have one on the stage where you can't go. You'd have one in the audience, and then you'd have one, you know, on the mixing boards. You can go all the way around. But what you could also do is, if you're watching Imagine Dragons, you can also create dragons that actually come out from the stage, right? So when you start thinking about these things that we're already doing in television, right? And you start thinking about layering them in on top of, because everybody right now is thinking of video from VR the same way that people would have thought of television as being a tool for sticking a camera at the 50-yard line to watch a game. That's how people are thinking about VR. And, you know, yeah. They're not thinking about all of the other pieces that happen. Social being one of it.
Sorry to interrupt. I think that somebody wiser than me that I can't remember who put it this way, which is that every time a new medium gets developed, we think about it within the mechanics of the old medium. So for instance, the first Bloomingdale's e-commerce site was basically a digital recreation of their catalog, as opposed to, you know, thinking about what are the new things that you can do with this technology that you couldn't do with the old paradigm. Maybe it can be improved rather than just recreated.
I was very fortunate at CNET. Because we competed with, you know, multi-billion-dollar magazine publishers who thought the internet was a magazine, And that was the best news. That was the best news, you know, ever.
I mean, we've seen a lot more fragmentation of media and attention in general, as opposed to saying that one thing totally swallows something else.
Exactly.
So there's no reason to assume that that wouldn't happen here.
You got to build on top of what's already there. And that's where I think a lot of people in this industry have gone wrong, because they've tried to take on a medium that's pretty amazing. I mean, television, and it's 70, 80 years old, and you've got people who, you know, who've been doing it, and they've honed it and perfected it. And so, you know, anytime you're doing anything new, you're better off co-opting activities that are already happening and extending them than you are trying to go right into a gale force wind. And that's a lot of what I think happened to VR. And I think, you know, I know from our philosophy is just do whatever necessary for adoption. Like, for instance, I mean, our camera is totally integrated, whole thing, but there are other cameras out there, and we're trying to make it so that the content they produce can be put on our cloud and also distributed. We just want it to work, right? So we just think a very, you know, basic philosophy is what needs to be built, how do we fill in the gaps, how do we work with partners who can provide, you know, the things that are necessary, and, you know, try to, as I said, deliver that first set of technologies that's close enough that people can find the things they want us to change. And, you know, I think that we're there. Our value is to drive compelling content through to an end user.
Yeah, which totally makes sense. And I think one thing I guess I want to leave you with for now, or leave our listeners with, assuming we use this, the idea of, like, how to make better predictions about future marketing and technology trends in terms of what's going to hit and when, what are the things that aren't ready for prime time. Just basically, there are people who are making constant decisions and trying to become better, essentially short-term futurists themselves. I mean, what's something that served you well in terms of, even apart from VR, a trend that you're paying attention to now and knowing essentially what to pay attention to and how to make the proper predictions?
The obvious never happens. I mean, but what happens is that everybody thinks it's the obvious, right? Whatever people think is the obvious thing that's going to happen, there's some guy who's thinking something different, and his idea is different from everybody else's, and that's more likely where it's going to go. There's so much of this. I even look at VR. You know, the obvious thing early on, and a lot of money was spent, basketball, football, you know, I mean, huge amounts of money were spent around these sports.
Yeah.
Like, that's obvious, right? Because everybody likes, you know, football.
Right.
Everybody likes basketball. That's obvious. And the amount of money spent on doing those things in VR were huge. Huge. And they're still going on. But I don't think that's where VR is gonna find its home. It's certainly not going to find its home. It's certainly not going to find its home there without figuring out how it can settle its differences with these mediums and become partners.
Somebody put it to me, I think, well, which is, they were talking about Back to the Future 2 and about how you had all of these flying cars, which we haven't had, that would be an obvious thing, but there seems to be no internet in the world of Back to the Future 2.
The internet wasn't obvious. I mean, speeds were slow, you had no graphics, it was all text, you know. And it was not, it was not obvious for everybody in media, but there were a few of us out there who were sort of building stuff. What was obvious at the time was John Malone, who's a big cable guy, announced the 500 channel future, and everybody was talking about how we would have video on demand and we'd have 500 cable channels. Well, I guess the 500 cable channels happened, so did the video on demand.
But they all
handled over the internet.
Right. Yeah. That's so funny. And I normally ask people in the middle a bunch of irreverent lightning round questions, but I'll just ask you one at the end since we didn't do that. How annoying is it from an SEO perspective to not be able to own your first name, you know, versus the musical artist? Is that difficult?
Well, I'm over it now. The anger was, you know, after months of therapy, I'm now fully okay with the fact that she stole the name of a 54-year-old man.
Well, but,
worked for her, and I feel good. I feel good about that.
There you go. And I think we can say we're maybe bigger Halsey fans than we are of Akon right now. So we'll leave it at that.
I think she's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This is fantastic.
And there you have it. Hopefully you're leaving this conversation with Halsey with more questions about VR, which is great because we're going to be covering that a little bit more in some future episodes. And as always, please feel free to rate and review us. We really appreciate it, and that's how more and more people are finding out about the show. So you become part of the way that the Future Proof community is growing. If you haven't subscribed, then I don't have to tell you guys. Subscribe already. And thank you so much for that. And until next time, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof. Thank you.